And we will proceed to case number four, Black versus Long-Term Disability Plan, 07-3550. And we have Mr. Dubofsky.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Mark Dubofsky. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Elizabeth Beau Black. As the court is aware from the briefs, the history of this case goes back to 2001 when Ms. Black underwent major cardiovascular surgery. After that surgery, she returned to her extremely rewarding, high-profile job, despite the risk that was imposed by an inoperable aortal aneurysm. Finally, however, in 2003, Ms. Black succumbed to her condition. The district court found that there was no evidence that there was a decline at around the time the disability was claimed in August of 2003. However, the record reveals several instances where there was a decline in Ms. Black's condition. Dr. Deacon's record indicates that her cardiac surgeon had recommended in February of 2003 that she go on disability. That's at page 795 of the record. Dr. Deacon's office visit note from April 7th, 2003, at page 818, noted that Ms. Black may be advised to seek disability due to stress and cardiac problems. There's an article from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from May 8th, 2003, titled Health Fears May Sideline Black. Page 946 of the record. And, of course, the day of the claimed disability, Ms. Black underwent a 24-hour cardiac monitor study because she was experiencing marked cardiac symptoms that caused her to consult with her cardiologist. And, in fact, the results of that study were that she was experiencing some cardiac problems, and that's at page 812 of the record. We acknowledge that Ms. Black was having conflicts with her employer at the time that she went on disability. But one of the oddities of this case is that Judge Adelman found that this was a summary judgment decision. The court's opinion cited the applicable standards for summary judgment, pointed out that inferences have to be drawn against the movement. In this case, because there were cross motions, the court's put in the odd position of trying to judge counter inferences both ways. Yet every inference in this case went in favor of Standard Insurance Company and against Ms. Black, contrary to the applicable Social Security standards. Now, perhaps the way to get out of this thicket is to use the Glenn decision from the Supreme Court as a roadmap. The Glenn decision says that judges reviewing the lawfulness of benefit determinations have to consider a combination of factors, of which conflict of interest is one. There is no dispute in this case that Standard Insurance Company was acting under a conflict of interest, such as that described in the Glenn decision. They were both the payor of benefits and the administrator of the claim. A second factor that the Supreme Court pointed to in the Glenn decision was the consideration of the Social Security decision. As in the Glenn decision, the standard policy covering Ms. Black mandated that she apply for Social Security disability and also provided that the insurance company would benefit from a Social Security award based on an offset of benefits. Yet after the Social Security benefits were awarded, the insurance company made short work of the decision and never looked at the underlying basis of the Social Security award, which was clearly documented in the file. In the file was the entire Social Security record, which indicated the rationale as to why Social Security found Ms. Black disabled from both a medical and a vocational standpoint.
Didn't Paul Revere also, that was a private insurer, and they have also found her disabled?
That's absolutely correct. So we have a situation here where two out of three disability evaluators independently came to the conclusion that Ms. Black was disabled.
Is the definition of disability the same under the Paul Revere policy as standard policy?
The wording would have been somewhat different. The policy itself is not in the record, but both would have been what are generically referred to as own occupation policies. where
not
disability...
Not any occupation.
Not any occupation, such as the Social Security standard, which requires a complete inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity. I mentioned the medical vocational factors from the Social Security decision because it brings up a case that we cited in our briefs, the Demirovic decision from the Second Circuit, which takes into account several key medical vocational factors, such as the claimant's age. In this case, Ms. Black was of advanced age, which is what triggered the Social Security decision, and the non-transferability of her skills. Ms. Black had very, very unique skills that would not have been transferable to any other occupation, according to the Social Security Administration. But where this case really falters with respect to this court reviewing the lawfulness of the decision is the factors that render the decision procedurally unreasonable, a term used by the Supreme Court in the Glenn decision. There are several factors which illustrate that this claim was procedurally unreasonable. The ERISA regulations explicitly require that the same doctor who consults with respect to the initial decision shall not be consulted with respect to the appellate decision.
Can I ask you about this letter that she sent to Mr. Kelly?
Correct.
And it's dated December 2 of 2002. Judge Adelman seemed to rely quite a bit on that, where he says, quote, that her cardiovascular condition, then, quote, allows her to be fully functional at this time, but is reactive to stress, not the day-to-day operation kind, but the unnecessary stress that comes from degrading, disparaging, and harassing conduct. Comment on that? Because Judge Adelman seemed to put a lot of weight in.
I have several responses to that. First of all, there's a temporal response. The letter was written in December of 2002, before the events of 2003, which indicated a decline in Ms. Black's cardiovascular condition. Secondly, there's no dispute that Ms. Black loved this job. This was an extremely high-profile job. The Summerfest program attracts millions of visitors to Milwaukee every summer, and Ms. Black was the face of Summerfest. So she would have probably said anything to try and continue in her job. But in further discussions, the Van Gorp memo of the meeting with Howard Schnull, the president of the board, Ms. Black indicated that what she really wanted was to stay on, but in a ceremonial position. So I don't think that the December 2002 letter to Mr. Kelly is all that relevant. But there is an aspect to Mr. Kelly that's extremely relevant, and I think the most important evidence of procedural unreasonableness. And that was Mr. Kelly taking it upon himself to contact Standard Insurance Company and tell Standard Insurance Company not only did he believe the claim was contrived, but he would try to convince them as to how it was contrived. This is a medical decision that's to be made. And as we pointed out by citing the Delisle decision from the Sixth Circuit, the reliance on these non-medical factors tainted the outcome of the case. Standard's doctors were given the non-medical factors. They commented on a TV show. Obviously, the claim decision maker was given these factors as well. Yet the key issue in this case is the medical evidence and the appropriate vocational evidence and not the medical factors. Finally, just two last points before I reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. A lot was made of the so-called stability of Ms. Black's aortal aneurysm. The fact that it was not enlarging after the initial enlargement following the surgery is not all that material, given the fact that it had enlarged once and the blood pressure was not controlled, and was not controlled contrary to what Judge Adelman found even after she left work, because there's evidence in the record from 2004 that the blood pressure was still under control. And finally, we have a history of biased claims administration. We cited the Newcomb versus Standard case, which is very similar. Reliance on reviewing doctors, disregarding the evidence from treating doctors of unquestionable expertise who had examined and were familiar with Ms. Black's condition. And for those reasons, we urge the court to reverse the court below.
Von Schlichter.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Warren Von Schlichter, and I represent the defendant, Long-Term Disability Insurance, which is the ERISA plan sponsored by the Milwaukee World Festival. There were inconsistencies and inaccuracies in the evidence submitted by Mrs. Black and her counsel. Mrs. Black underwent surgery in March 2001 to repair an ascending aortic aneurysm. That was successful, and there were no further complications. Surgery was not performed on the smaller aortic aneurysm in the descending aorta. Counsel, in his briefs and before the Court today, characterized the smaller aneurysm as inoperable, and that's not supported in the record. In fact, the smaller aneurysm was not repaired because conservative treatment was determined to be appropriate. When the surgery was performed, an elephant trunk patch was placed on the aneurysm so that if there should be an enlargement or a significant change in the aneurysm such that a repair was necessary, the patch was in place so that the repair could be made. So it is incorrect to say that the descending aortic aneurysm was inoperable. I think another inconsistency is what the Court has pointed out, that in the fall of 2002, Mrs. Black represented to the Milwaukee World Festival while she was vigorously pursuing another five-year term as executive director, that she was fully functional and that her medical condition was unaffected by day-to-day operational stress. Instead, she claimed that her condition was affected by the stress of verbal abuse and harassment, because those were the accusations that she was making at the time, that she was being verbally abused and harassed. And it was part of a political dispute within the Milwaukee World Festival that also spilled out into the press. The doctors at that time, in the fall of 2002, wrote to the Milwaukee World Festival at the behest of Black's counsel, and they focused on the stress of verbal abuse and harassment as well. Not one of those physicians, not one of the treating physicians in their fall 2002 letter said that working as executive director is a risk to Mrs. Black's health. And one would think, and one would expect, the treating physicians to have said so if that was the case. Instead, they focused on the risks of stress of verbal abuse and harassment.
Now, one of the things you rely on a lot is the four board-certified physicians who reviewed her medical records and concluded that the stress was not affected, that didn't affect her aneurysm. But couldn't these doctors' counsel argue that their opinions could really be tainted by the evidence in the record about her employment and the vote not to renew her contract? Was it appropriate for the doctors to consider that non-medical evidence?
I think it was appropriate for the doctors to consider the entire file. And I think there are several considerations here. The first is, I think that it is dangerous territory when an administrator is required to go through and redact a record and take out information that may or may not be useful. It really is a medical decision, and occupational factors impact that. But I think that I don't think administrators should have to scrub the record clean of humanity. Individuals need to be evaluated from a medical standpoint, looking at many factors. And Black's own treating physicians were aware of the difficulties with the Milwaukee World Festival and the allegations of harassment and abuse. And they took that into account, but no one dismisses their opinion, saying they had too much information about Mrs. Black. So I think it's appropriate for physicians in the context of an ERISA review to look at the entire file. What would be inappropriate if there were misrepresentations made? And that's not the situation here. There were no misrepresentations. They received the full file. They were, of course, aware of the unusual stress of harassment and abuse. And that's an important factor in evaluating Mrs. Black's medical condition and how it responded to even extraordinary stress, in addition in determining how it would respond to normal occupational stress. I think also if administrators were required to scrub the record clean of these human factors or occupational factors, administrators would be open to charges of selective review. So I think that we would be, I think that we are best served by having physicians review all the pertinent evidence. And I think here, this information provided regarding the occupational situation involved stress, and it was appropriate, and it was also considered by Mrs. Black's physicians.
Ms. Black suggests in her reply brief that Dr. Schraback and Gwinnell were conflicted and points to some other cases in which their testimony was criticized. Was that issue raised below?
I believe the issue generally was raised that treating physicians are more reliable than consulting physicians. And, of course, the Seventh Circuit's Davis case held that as long as a consulting physician is fully informed, impartial, and I think these physicians were impartial, that their opinions can be followed and trusted. And I don't think there's any evidence here that the physicians consulted by Standard changed their medical assessment for monetary gain or out of prejudice. In fact, their opinions are actually well supported by the evidence. We cited the Annals of Thoracic Medicine, a Yale University study, which showed that the risk of dissection or leakage of an aneurysm in the 5.0 to 6.0 centimeter range is 2.5%, and the risk of rupture for an aneurysm of that size is 1.75%. That is a low risk. So I think these doctors' opinions can be trusted. And in addition, the inconsistencies in the opinions of the plaintiff's treating physicians lend some questions with regard to their opinions, because they supported her bid for another five-year term in the fall of 2002. And then after her contract was terminated, less than 1 year later, they changed their assessment and said she's disabled. But in the last medical exam before her termination, July 3rd, 2003, Mrs. Black's cardiologist, Dr. Slosky, said her blood pressure is normal. And he said, and I'm quoting, "From a cardiac standpoint, I feel that we have finally achieved some stability."
And that was after she stopped working.
That was during the height of Summerfest, when things were at its most stressful, when she was put in the middle of the festival. That was the last examination she had before the personnel committee of the Milwaukee World Festival voted not to renew her contract.
So she was working at the time. I thought he said that her blood pressure was finally under control only after she stopped working.
That's not true. Dr. Slosky, on July 3rd, 2003, said, "I feel that we have finally achieved some stability." And her blood pressure was 122 over 78, completely normal. Mrs. Black is a local celebrity in the Milwaukee area. She has access to the media, the newspapers, and the radio. And she took advantage of that and was on the radio.
So in May of 2004, Slosky, didn't he also note that her blood pressure had been adequately controlled and she was not employed at that point, right?
That's correct. Given Mrs. Black's celebrity status, I think that a self-interested administrator would have approved this claim out of concern for negative media attention. And there was negative media attention against Standard. But I think that Standard in this case made the appropriate decision and certainly has rational support for its determination, and its decision was not arbitrary and capricious. Standard went against what the media and Mrs. Black's local celebrity might sway a self-interested administrator to do. In this instance, standards benefit determination has rational support in the record. It was not arbitrary and capricious. And we respectfully request that the decision of the district court be upheld. Thank you.
Bosky.
It is impossible to separate out the non-medical evidence which biased the reviewing doctor's opinions. And in rebuttal to counsel's comments, I would just like to read a short quote from the Delisle decision that was handed down by the Sixth Circuit recently. "We find an increased risk of bias in the medical file review process when a conflicted plan administrator gives information to regular independent contractor consultants that portrays the claimant in a negative light. These improper communications suggest procedural unreasonableness, which justifies the court in giving more weight to the conflict." The court below gave no weight to the conflict. Glenn was issued subsequent to the decision below. The conflict must be considered, according to Glenn. It cannot be disregarded. And perhaps we have a tiebreaker situation here, where the tie should go to Ms. Black. But in our view of the evidence it so predominates in one direction that Ms. Black was entitled to these benefits, just as Social Security and Paul Revere Insurance Company found. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to both counsel. I want to make a statement, though, before you leave. The judges get assigned to a panel of cases generally 4 to 5 weeks before they're set for argument. And we see the cases with a name. The name on this case said Elizabeth Black versus Long-Term Disability Insurance, a shortened case name. That meant absolutely nothing to me, as almost every case means absolutely nothing to you unless there's something in the name that triggers something. So about a week ago, I, for the first time, really took a look at this case, took the briefs out, and after reading a page, I found that Elizabeth Black is Bull Black. I'm from Milwaukee. Judge Williams is from Chicago. Judge Tinder is from Indianapolis. In Milwaukee, everybody knows who Bo Black is. I also know Summerfest pretty well. I've never missed going to something at Summerfest in the 35 years it's been there. I have pictures when my kids were little going to Summerfest when we sat on the ground, and now it's this extraordinary festival in Milwaukee every year. I'm hoping to see Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan there together on July 1st. What a night that's going to be. So I knew a lot of things when I got into this case. I know who Bo Black is. I have, to my knowledge, never talked to her. I know her. If I would see her walking down the street, I would know that's Bo Black. I might have been at some events that with a lot of people. Milwaukee's a small town, unlike Indianapolis. So you know everybody. And I thought about these things, and a week ago I decided that there was really no need for me to throw this case on some other judge. Because I don't know her personally, and I don't have any connection with Summerfest other than I like going there. And I just wanted to put that on the record now so everybody involved in this case knows that. So with that said, the court will take this case under advisement.